My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the show. It is Friday, it's new release day, or at least a time of recording this. Don't know when you're listening to it, but thanks for popping in and checking out the show. This week we have a brand new guest, so new guest alerts, cue sound effects here. I don't actually have any sound effects. But this week we've got Mike Drucker, comedian, writer, all around great person. He's recently released his own book called Good Game, No Rematch. You can buy it everywhere now. There's a great audiobook version of it. If you look up his, you know, credits, he's done a bunch of cool things. He has no business being on Pixels and Polygons, but thank you so much for joining the show and participating and having some fun with me this week, Mike. Check out all of his stuff. Yeah, I've got a review of his book on my Patreon page for free. You can, if you head over to patreon.com/Darren Hupke, you can see that. You can follow for free, but you can also just read that review of the book there. I loved it. It was, you know, if you're a gaming fan, it's just got a great personal story from Mike over his life growing up, being around and being influenced and inspired and impacted by gaming all through his youth in the coming of age into adulthood and into even working in the industry. So check it out. He's a fun guest to have, and we had a great time recording the episode. So look forward to that after the break. Other than that, same business as usual. The Beat 'em Up book is live, and you can get it on pixelsandpolygons.net if you're an international listener or reader. If you go to your, like, whatever local domain Amazon equivalent, you should be able to order it directly from them for a cheaper shipping option, though you can still order it from me if you'd like. The Retro Game Zine, Mike actually was the contributor to the Blaster Master issue, so that is the current issue, though another one is right around the corner. The Mario Tennis issue will be out in the on September 1st, or if I, you know, get antsy and pull the trigger sooner, it'll be out, you know, days before that. So you can check that out. That's on pixelsandpolygons.net as well. And then what else? Plug it away at the new 32-bit library book. And I've got my idea for my next project, which will be something fresh and something new. I'm excited to do, but you know, it's way too early to talk about that. But otherwise, yeah, that's what I got. Check it out. Links in the show notes below. But, again, buy any of the physical books or zines. I've even got t-shirts now, that are like direct print and shipped to you. So you can see all that stuff on pixelsandpolygons.net. If you want anything digital, go to the digital shop over on my Patreon at patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. Again, the books and zines are available digitally there. And tell your friends about the podcast. Rate, review it, like, subscribe, whatever. Tell some folks. Helps spread the word and helps get, you know, new ears and new eyes on the stuff that I'm doing. So I appreciate all the reviews and shares and everything I've gotten so far. So thank you, and please continue to do so if you think you know somebody who might enjoy it. Other than that, that's all I got. We will see you again, hopefully, and be listening to a new episode next Friday. And otherwise, have a great rest of your week. Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke. This week, we've got a brand new guest, one that I'm excited to have on the show. They were a recent contributor to the Blaster Master issue of Retro Game Zine. I have no idea how or why it worked out that way, but I am super jazzed and thrilled to have benefited from that relationship there. But we've got Mike Drucker on the show. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, how's it going? If you folks hear my voice, this is old Mike Drucker.
Thank you for doing the show. I mean, thank you for doing the zine, obviously, like writing the article and everything. It was super cool and a super cool angle to have writing about the Worlds of Power book. But thanks for doing that. And yeah, thanks again for jumping on the show.
Of course. Yeah, no, it was super fun to do. I mean, like, I'm so happy people are bringing back actual like sort of publications about games, like, and so I just wanted to participate because I'm so delighted that that's back.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you. How about you are a little bit of a different status than most of my other guests. I mean, some people probably already know quite a bit about you, but do you mind sharing a little bit about who you are and some, you know, recent projects maybe you want to kind of highlight or plug or share with the world?
Yeah, of course. I am a comedian and writer. I've written for video games and television. In the video game world, I worked at Nintendo in the Treehouse as a localization writer, and I worked on Kid Icarus Uprising, Mario Party 9, a tiny bit of Skyward Sword, a tiny bit of a couple things. And I've also written for Valve on things I can't talk about, and Sony on a trivia game that I can talk about, I guess. And on the other writing side, I've written for television. I've written for The Tonight Show, Mystery Science Theater 3000, Late Night, Adam Ruins Everything, and, you know, the Golden Globes, a few other things mixed in there. And I also recently wrote a book called Good Game, No Rematch, which is a book about growing up with video games and how much they influenced my life. And it's a comedy book. It is fun and funny. I actually record voice the audiobook, so if you like my voice, you can get that. It's almost like a 9-hour stand-up album. And I basically a writer and comedian that just loves video games and loves television.
That's awesome. Yeah, Good Game, No Rematch. I did a little review on my Patreon. It's free to read and everything. It's a super fun book. I read a lot of I'm a huge comic book nerd, and you know, I read a lot, but gaming books and like history and like insight books and all stuff, like I have a full like massive shelf of those things. And your book, while like yes, it's a personal story, like it definitely is one that just like reminds you of all those elements, you know, hopefully from your own childhood growing up and everything. And it fits perfectly on the shelf. Like it was a fantastic read, super funny, even like some heartfelt moments and everything in it as well, which I was not anticipating. Great job there. Like a huge recommendation. Like the audiobook, obviously, for folks who, you know, don't have the time to sit there and just read, you know, in commute, like get the audiobook as well. It's huge, huge, huge recommendation.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I also big fan of like boss fight books. They recently they were at San Diego Comic-Con, so I go there every year, and they had a table that was the first time I guess they tried it this year, but they were doing like buy three get one free on their books, and their books are already super affordable. So I've probably finished
8 or 9 of their books, and each one is different, obviously. It's about a different game, but it's also written by a different author, and the author is definitely the one who, like, makes the book, you know, either that, like, top-notch experience or not. Most of them have been, I mean, only one I've been lukewarm on, but I did not realize that you had written for one of theirs, so I picked yours up when I was there, and that's the one I'm currently reading through right now, is the Silent Hill 2 book that you wrote, but I had no idea that you had done that one. It's been great so far.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was so much fun to do. When that series started up, I remember like getting so excited about it because I kind of like those 33 and a third books about albums. And to me, that, you know, Boss Fight books is kind of the video game version of that.
Yes.
And I actually reached out to them and I was like, is there any way I can write a book for you guys sometime? And they were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, no, please. And, you know, they took my pitch for Silent Hill 2, and it was such a great process. They're so supportive. They're so great about like working with you to make your angle on the book work. It was honestly a great time working on that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's interesting. You wrote it not knowing that remake was just, you know, coming out just a few years later and everything. So, yeah. You know, it is part of the special sauce of it all is the questions, you know, like what would you do again? But it has happened again, and you can return to Silent Hill 2 in a new way as well. But it's been super great. I like I said, those books, I don't work for Boss Fight or anything. I've talked about them before on the show as well. But it's just great to like have, you know, somebody be like, as a fan, like talk about like the history or like behind the scenes or like just sharing the story of like a game's history and development and, you know, like that site, but then also like fuse their own voice and perspective and like their like journey within it as well. Like those two things combined just make those books like such like great reads and all that stuff. So huge recommendations. So pick up a couple of Mike's books then, based on my recommendation here for y'all. You'll listen to me. You'll go buy them, and you'll do exactly that thing, I'm sure. But yeah.
Please listen to him. Please listen to him. I owe a lot of money to some bad people. Please listen to him.
Well, Mike, I usually kick things off with some icebreakers and some this or that questions. Would you like to get rolling and go through this little gauntlet here?
Let's do it.
Okay, so this or that, we'll start with. As the title suggests, you must choose this or that. Pretend there's a fictional gun to your head, or there are spikes below your feet.
Right.
But we'll do a few of these, and then we'll go on to the icebreaker question. But let's feel you out here. PlayStation or Nintendo 64? Remember that gun is hanging over your head.
I'm going to reluctantly say PlayStation.
Okay. Where's the reluctance come from? I mean, obviously, there's some key gems on the 64. I'm sure it's the Zeldas of the world. But what do you think is making it a little bit reluctant for you?
I was and am such a big Nintendo fanboy, both having before working for the company and after. And when the Nintendo 64 came out, I was such a jerk about it. I was like, this PlayStation, nothing. This is going to be the best system ever. Mm. And I think once Final Fantasy VII came out, it was over for me. Like, even I had to be like, all right, this has got more of what I'm looking for. So kind of as like a big Nintendo fanboy, I want to say Nintendo 64, but in my heart, I know the answer is PlayStation.
Gotcha. I'm a you know, one of those weirdos with, you know, like bad tattoos. And I'm a huge PlayStationer. Like, everybody who knows me knows, like, I'm like the PlayStation guy. Like, I love all video games and everything, but like, I just have nostalgia for that original PlayStation experience. And PlayStation's never really done me wrong, but they're a massive corporation who doesn't know who I am, no owes me anything, but I feel, you know, indebted to them for the experiences they've given me. But my very first tattoo I ever got was Mario and Luigi. So, like, I have a huge, like, you know, a huge heart for Nintendo. And sometimes I can be hypercritical of them, but it all comes from, like, this love of, like, you know, where I came from and where my journey started with them. So, I get the give and take there, but it's the nature of the this or that.
Yep.
Let's, I threw this as an example, but Ryu or Ken?
Ryu, I think. I don't know. I like his design more. When the World Warrior came out when I was a kid, like, I was more of a Ryu guy than a Ken guy. why. I don't have a reason, really. I think I was just maybe more drawn to like him looking more like what I thought a martial artist looked like. And I don't know if that's racist or not. He just looked like what I thought a martial artist, whereas Ken kind of looked like my dad's friends. And I didn't really love that when I was a kid.
Good. Let's see. Get good or easy mode?
Easy mode. Easy mode. Easy mode. I'm in my 40s now. I want to get through a video game. I don't want to like cheat my way through, so I don't want it to be like, you know, just cheats on, but also I'm past the point where I really want to get good at a game if I don't have to. You know, something like Elden Ring I'll get good at just because you have to, and that's part of the game. Like, if a part of the game is the actual combat being that way, then, you know, get good. But in general, like, when I play, like, Baldur's Gate 3, I'm usually in story mode just because I love the story and want to be a character in this world more than I want to load and reset 20 times to get through a battle.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Castlevania or Metroid?
Castlevania. You know what? Castlevania. I think I love Metroid. I love Metroid very much. I just think that I have more childhood memories associated with Castlevania. I've played Castlevania on more airplane trips on the, you know, Game Boy Advance and the DS. I just think I've played so much more Castlevania that I got to go with that.
Okay. And then last one here, pixels or polygons?
Pixels, although, you know, I think when it comes to art direction, that the actual art direction is the most important. So I could go with either, but if you're showing me two role-playing games and one of them is pixely, I'll be like, oh, I'm old. I love that.
Yeah, these, like, this, all of Square's, like, HD 2D stuffs and the Team Asano stuff. Like, I just, it's instant buy every time. I just saw the announcement, like, as we're recording this in towards the end of August, whenever this is released, that Triangle Strategy was just released on PS5. Like, I hadn't had a chance. I mean, I guess I technically had a Switch in the house, but I don't play it that often. But now that that's available to me on, like, on my comfort console, was like instantly in my cart and purchased it just because just that visual design and everything like gets me every time. Every time.
1,000%. 1,000%. Like, I'm such a sucker for it. I don't know why. Like, you know, like, I have Dragon Quest 1-3 on the Switch as the, because they originally released them sort of as like the 2D version that was like sort of like 16-bit-y, and sort of the version that they have on cell phones. And I'm still going to get the HD remake just because I'm such a sucker for that art style.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's games that combined like pixel art, like characters in 3D worlds already. I mean, Dragon Quest VII and like the Tales of games on the PlayStation, like they were like that, but like, for some reason, doing it now with like a fresh coat of like paint and like 4K resolution just like makes it like pop all like the light bloom and things like that that happen. It's just like, okay, this is, you know, this is just another world, and I want this every time.
Yeah, and it's funny because you've recently seen and like one or two game designers from that PS1 era who are like, I don't know why you folk keep trying to make it look like PS1. Yeah. All we wanted to do was make it look better, which is very funny to me.
Yeah, they were trying to squeeze every drop out and dream of like more processing power. And then now everyone's looking back like, no, slap some limitations on this. Let's make this look like something, you know, from that era. It's weird. That's nostalgia. So it'll do weird things. Okay. Well, I'll ask you a single icebreaker question here, and we'll get into the main question topic, if that sounds good with you.
Yeah.
These questions, let's see. I like this one. What game did you wrongly judge by its cover or title? Is there a game that, you know, you skipped, you passed up? Maybe you did come back to it and finally play it and enjoy it, but is there a game that you wrongly judged by its cover or title?
You know what? This is going to sound a little weird, but actually, Luigi's Mansion. I think when it came out on GameCube, I was a little disappointed that it wasn't a Mario game coming out with the launch. And it just sort of seemed, and like, I didn't really get Luigi yet, because I was, you know, I was in high school when the GameCube came out. And so I was a big Mario fan, but I was in that weird stage of teenage years where you're like, I'm too mature for this now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of hit a sore point where I was like, it's not Mario. It looks like, you know, it's not going to be scary like Resident Evil or Silent Hill 1. And I don't know, I just didn't get it. And so I really didn't play it until Luigi's Mansion 2 on the 3DS. And when I played that, I was like, oh, this is really fun. I was just so disappointed that it wasn't something else that I refused to give it a chance.
Hmm. Did you play Sunshine when that finally came out? And was that like the Mario game you wanted for the GameCube?
No, it definitely was not the Mario game I wanted. I played it. I played through it. And I played it again on the Switch. But it definitely, if you ranked my favorite Mario games, it would be near the bottom. That said, I do, in retrospect, appreciate that they were trying something new.
Yeah, that was the first Mario game. I did not see the credits. I've still never seen the credits and like finished that game ever. I wasn't disappointed by it, but I definitely think I was in an era where I was traveling, or I was, you know, out of my house a little bit more. So I was putting a ton of mileage on like my Game Boy Advance and stuff like that. And so when I was at home, like there was usually some massive PS2 game staring at me that I needed to be playing while I was at home, you know, while I Harvest Mooned and Mario Tennis on the road.
exactly, but, though.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for answering. That was a good answer. We have the main question for the episode, though, and that's what we're here for. That's the listeners' demand, is the main topics. Nobody's demanded anything from the show, actually, so sorry about that. The question we wanted to ask today, one of the ones you selected, was, do you have a favorite collector's edition or deluxe edition of a game? And the secondary question that may be, you know, a bulk of the topic, but do you collect other memorabilia from your favorite games? So,
I think my answer might sound a little strange, but I like to collect old PC games that have all those extras in them. And so I know that's a bit of a cheat answer, but, you know, Limited Run Games now re-releases those old PC games with facsimiles of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think as a kid I really appreciated how cool it was to buy, like, Civilization 2 and get, like, a giant book inside that both explained the game and kind of taught you a little bit. And so I've gone back and bought, like, old King's Quest games, old Police Quest games, you know, old LucasArts games. And to me, even though they're not technically collector's editions, they include so many cool extras and features that it feels the same way. Like opening one of those, you know, because often I get them used and already opened. If it's plastic wrapped, I'm not going to open it. And just even like things like, I know that it's annoying, but like the copy protections were always different for all of them. So you get like a little wheel or some like one of those weird, you have to wear red glasses to see through a type thing. And so I am nostalgic for those things. So that is my favorite type of, technically I'll call them collector's editions to collect, just because I miss all those extras. I miss feeling like getting a game was like getting a whole experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just reminded me of those, that early form of DRM at the time. I mean, there'd be certain games that ask you to like look at a certain page of a manual, like, you know, in a, like a DOS game that you're like playing and everything. And you have to go to page 17 and look at the third word to like confirm that you own the game. But like those wheels and those things that they would do for verification.
Yeah.
That was so strange. But man, what a old time. I've like totally forgotten about how games used to do that until right now. Flooding back.
Yeah.
So do you have like what's your favorite type of like extra bundled in? I mean like books and all stuff are always good. And I guess if you do have an opened one and you do have some of those items accessible to you, do you keep them out of the box and put them and display them on a shelf or something? Or do you keep them back in the box because you like to, you know, keep that package whole?
It depends on the quality of it. You know, sometimes, you know, you'll get a box that, you know, I'll keep the discs and stuff in it. But if there's a really thick book in it and that's kind of in nice condition, sometimes I'll put it on a shelf. You know, it kind of depends on what the extras are. I don't put everything on display. I also live in New York City, so I don't have all the space in the world to display things. So there's kind of more of like, imagine like a very small rotating museum exhibit is more like what I have out for things. And so most of it's kept in the box just out of necessity. But if it's a cool book, I will put it on my bookshelf next to anything else.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I used to work in a comic shop for a few years, for a number of years. And we sold like Sideshow statues and big, you know, Hot Toys action figures and all these like giant things. And I always liked the idea of like, you know, having a you know, like, oh, I'll have a statue of all of the Avengers or all like some giant space for this. But like, they're very costly and they do take up a lot of space. So I'm very minimum with what I have. I mean, I have a lot of books on bookshelves, but from like the trinkets and cool little things, like not a lot. I guess right now next to me, I've got the Death Stranding 2, like, there's a statue that it came with, and I haven't even gotten to the point in the game where I even know what this thing is, but, like, looking at it has, like, spoiled some things. I'm like, wait, that's the ship that you have in the game on this thing here. Oh, no, okay, stop looking at this statue, but it's just sitting up on top of this bookshelf. Do you collect any other, like, memorabilia? Do you have, I mean, obviously you shared not a lot of space and all that stuff, that, which makes sense, but, you know, still, I guess the question could be asked, like, do you collect other memorabilia of, your favorite games, like any artwork or things like that?
I do collect little arcade machines that work, anything from those little keychain arcade machines to sort of the foot tall ones from, I think it's New Wave Toys. I could be getting the name wrong. I really like having little working arcade machines. I don't collect, like, the ones that are just sort of action figurey that don't work. I like the idea that I can, like, play them for 15 minutes and forget about them. And I probably have 20 or 30 of those. And those are also useful because they're so small that it's easy to, like, put them out. I also collect bad video games. I do a show, a live show. I've done it for all over the country called Shit Arcade. If I'm not allowed to swear, you can bleep the first word in that.
Yeah, fuck shit.
And, and I have comedians on stage, and we play bad video games that are, like, on a projector, and it's almost like Mystery Science Theater 3000 for games, but live. And it's super fun to do. And so, both from doing that and even from before doing that, I love collecting weird, bad games. Not just games that reviewed poorly, but, like, you know, I have an Austin Powers game for the Game Boy Color that is a Windows 95 parody. And it's so weird, and it has no reason to exist, that it's just precious to me. You know, it's not like I mean, we do make fun of the games, but there's just something interesting in a game that's so wild and so weird that it just makes you laugh. And so I must have, in a bin, you know, 40 to 50 strange, weird games ranging from Atari to maybe, you know, PlayStation 3.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I saw you promoting that on Blue Sky coming up. You're doing that. Where are you doing that in New York, this next one that's coming up?
Yep, I'm doing it September 4th in New York City at Union Hall, which is in Brooklyn. So if you're in New York and you want to see people make fun of games, we got a really good lineup.
That's cool. Yeah, I just got to go to New York for the first time in my life last weekend for the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo. I got to fly out there, but I did not get any tourist time, or I had a morning where I could have gone into the city, and I wanted to, I was like, what I actually wanted to do of all things was go to 30 Rock and then walk to the Nintendo store. And then maybe, you know, if I could see Radio City Music Hall or something like that, you know, like just look, you know, the touristy thing to do. But I went alone. That was the first problem. And then the second problem was when I got there, I was like, all right, well, how do I get there? Let's just look up an Uber. And it was like $100 and something to get to from where I was to 30 Rock. And I was like, man, $100, it's going to be a $200 round trip just to even like be there, not even counting any money spent type of thing. So I ended up not doing it. But I told a friend of the show who lives in New York, he was like, oh, you should have just taken the train. It's $10. I was like, well, I don't know what you locals do. I didn't know. I'm here alone. So next time I'm going to have to visit the city proper and everything. But I did not get to do that this year.
No, it's I have spent so much time in that Nintendo store because before I worked at Nintendo, way back in college, I was an intern at Saturday Night Live. And so I would go to the Nintendo store all the time to kill time. And then after Nintendo, I worked for The Tonight Show, which is also in 30 Rock. And I went to the Nintendo store to kill time whenever I was stressed. So I've spent so much time in that store and probably bought very little, just more like wandered around, looked at everything, and then went back to work.
That's funny. I mean, I almost did that same stress walk then, you know, just going to look at it, take a picture of the building and see outside and walk to the Nintendo store. That's
exactly
funny. Cool. Well, that's it. We did the thing. That's the show. We ask the question, we talk about it, and it's short and sweet. So thank you, Mike, for joining. Do you want to share any like social media plugs or anything that people want to follow you at, anything upcoming? I guess we did just talk about your show, but anything else you want people to know about coming up soon?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on social media. Most things I'm either at Mike Drucker or at Mike Drucker is dead. And yeah, buy Good Game No Rematch. Or, you know, it's also a great gift for the holidays. And, you know, come to Shit Arcades on September 4th. And also, the first Thursday of every month in New York, in Queens, I'm doing a show called My Obituary Show, where comedians write and read their own obituaries. And that is at QED Astoria. So if you're in New York City, there are two chances to see me do something dorky.
That's cool. Well, thank you for joining, Mike. We will have you on the show in the future for sure, if you'll return.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That was a weird way to frame that, if you'll return. I mean, we're going to actually record a second episode right after this. That's the behind the magic thing, but it's just a weird way to phrase that. But oh, well, that's just me. We'll fix it in the edit. But have a good one, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.